This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome everyone to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and hey, it's 10 feet. Bob Hope could jump this with his golf cart. See, I can spit across it. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. So I don't know about you guys, but I watched UFC fights last night and kind of thought about what I could come up with in regards to the Conor McGregor, Max Holloway, quote unquote, fight. I guess I don't see the need to speak ill of Conor, only because, one, I'm not going to turn this into an entire episode at all. It's interesting to me how divisive it seems to be, where you have one camp of people or one group of people who are very, very critical of him. Shouldn't have led with a kick like that. So if you don't know, I don't think I'm giving away too much. Conor McGregor has been out of the MMA game for a little bit, and it's quite amazing that he wanted to get back into it. It's got to be driven by pure ego. It really has to. And I don't mean that even negatively. It's just the guy's made a lot of money really from that Floyd Mayweather fight. So he trains his butt off to go up against Max Holloway, who is a Hall of Fame MMA fighter. It just is. And they're going to have their second fight, I think, I would say early in Max's career for sure. And I think Conor won that fight. So this would be the part two. They're going to maybe look to do a part three to actually have a fight. Conor's been out of it for a while. I mean, I'm thinking of the mental discipline needed, the drive to train like he trained for this fight when he doesn't need to. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of fighters, they come from very little. They're scrapping. They're fighting's how they put food on the table, if you will. Conor doesn't have to do that anymore. And yet he did. And it sucks because he gets out there. I don't know. He insists he wasn't injured before the fight. I don't know. There's some video of him kind of getting checked over before getting in the ring by the referees, stuff like that, and by the cut people, putting on petroleum jelly or Vaseline or whatever for cuts to prevent abrasions, really getting them ready to go in the ring. And there's certain mannerisms that would lead you to believe that maybe he just had something going on with his knee already, be it from training camp or even just warming up in the back. Maybe not. He says not. Fine. But after he threw that kick, it was pretty obvious there was something wrong. And the fight ends very early. Just Max, whatever you think of fighters, what they should be doing, pretty much pled with the referee to get involved. Clearly, Conor couldn't fight, couldn't defend himself. I just feel like that's the reality, is what they need to be doing is protecting the fighters and letting them fight another day. And MMA, we don't quite see the CTE levels that you see in boxing. Not that there isn't any, just not to the same level. A lot of that's to do with how the fights can end very suddenly. Boxing, you get the 8 counts, you get the 10 counts, standing 8 counts, you get 10 to get up. Nothing of the sort in MMA. Okay, generally. They don't count to 10. There's been some instances where they've essentially gotten that. But that's really not how it's supposed to work. And I say, let the fighter fight another day. Are there times that fights get called a little too soon? Yes. But I think that might be slightly better, if not in substantially better than letting it go too long. Are there times where fighters, where arguably the referee should have gotten involved and didn't, and then that fighter comes back and wins? Absolutely. So it's a bit of a dichotomy. I get it. I just tend to lean more towards protecting the fighter and let them fight another day. Why take on what could be permanent damage for what? So in this case, Connor obviously can't. And I don't want to drag this out too long. It's probably going too long already, honestly. But to not need to do it and to have that drive to train and prepare and get in there and get potentially beat up, that's an amazing thing. And all, I guess the important part to me was, and how divisive this was, is where you have the one camp of people, one group of people who are very critical of Connor. Shouldn't have thrown that kick. Shouldn't have been in there. And then there's the other side. Or really, actually, to finish that thought, screwed us out of a fight. Him getting hurt. He shouldn't have been in there. He shouldn't have thrown that kick. And now we don't get a fight. And then you have the other side of, and probably one that I'm a little more on now. Maybe I'm just a moron. But one that I tend to lean more towards, at least, is that he put in a lot of work. And what's, to me, honestly, what's the difference? I get the context of, or what the accepted ways a fight should end or could end. But what's the difference between Connor running to the center of the octagon, which could really happen with Max Holloway, throw two punches and he's laid out, knocked out? I'm sure, yes, the crowd erupts, all the things, maybe boos. But that would be a more acceptable end than he goes, throws a kick. Who knows what he did to his knee? ACL, MCL, both, all? I don't know. Fight ends anyways. I just don't see the difference. Both times you trained your butt off, worked your butt off, and you went out there and things didn't go the way you wanted. To me, it just doesn't matter. It's just not that big of a difference. Am I upset we didn't get to see the fight? Of course. Did I pay a lot of money for a pay-per-view to see it? Absolutely not. It was on Paramount. So at least we don't have that. And maybe we'll get a part three and see a real fight and he heals up from it. I don't know. But it is interesting how we forget about that. And maybe the relation to a repair shop is your mechanical and or technical specialist, or really any employee that's put forth effort over years or months to be able to do something well, and then they fail. And I don't mean necessarily like fail over and over, in that you cannot, probably can't do this for a living, or at least, or here. You need more training or a different environment to develop these skills. I'm just saying they mess up and fail. And what camp are you in? Are you in the group of very critical? Or are you in the camp of, man, they worked their tail off to be able to do that and it went sideways? I don't have an answer for you. It's just something to think about. Now, my idea for an episode of what to talk about, which I know I've been on this topic now for long enough, 10 minutes, maybe not quite, 7-8 minutes, that I guess I want to kind of talk about circuit testers, powered circuit testers. The reason I use that word or verbiage is technically, I think it's like Kleenex or Vice Grips, where power probes are named that from the company Power Probe. And do they fit into the diagnostic arsenal, or should they be in shops? Should technical specialists be using these? I say yes. Are they dangerous? Sure. So are jumper wires. They're dangerous too. We were using them. Even fused ones. Power probes or circuit testers are fused as well. I guess we might have to separate into maybe two groups. One is the power probe, as I think we would think of them, right? Where there is kind of a logic probe, maybe has a meter in it, has a switch, like a three-position switch, if you will, that there's the neutral state, and then one way is put 12-volt power to the tip, or go the other way and it grounds the tip. That would be a powered circuit tester, maybe? Electric and hybrid vehicles are here, and with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADAS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. The other group maybe would be like a meter, voltmeter test light, digital meter test light, digital something of that nature. There's two that pop into my mind that fit into that. One is a Lyle unit and the other one is the Topdon CT100, where they have a lead and you can clip that onto power or ground. And then when you touch whatever circuit, it gives you a meter reading, and then there's a voltmeter reading, and it might glow red or green depending on if it's power feed or 12 volts there, near 12 volts, and then ground. The other thing is they usually have a button, or both of them have a button. In these cases, the Lyle and the Topdon, they have a button on there. And inside, they have some sort of bulb, if you will, an incandescent bulb, a load. The Lyle is, I think they've rated that around 800 milliamps, something to that degree. That is the load it will apply to the circuit. And the Topdon, I want to say, is like up to, it's just over an amp, like 1.2 amp, something like that. I like both of them. I really do. I use both of them. I like the meter reading. I like being able to put a load on there and knowing that that load's kind of in that 1 amp range, roughly. I think that's very handy. And it's telling me more than just a straight up incandescent test light. I have very little need or use for an LED test light. I have one for really just in case where I don't want the load on it. This is very, very rare, meaning I don't know if I've used it in the last year or even two. I just have it there just in case. I come up with an idea of a very, very light load, no load type of a test. Something I'd probably just go grab a meter for. On the flip side, these things, it's kind of fast. Honestly, in testing fuses, applying that load helps you find issues. And I know just in circuits in general, but I guess I bring that up because that's kind of the first thing I grab for checking fuses is one of those two metered test lights, is because it's fast, you know, clip to battery negative and then start bouncing down fuses like you would with a test light. But now I see a meter reading and I can apply a little bit of a load. I like that. I like knowing the voltage and I like putting that load on there because I don't know about you, in Minnesota, sometimes fuses get some corrosion in there. And if you check it with just a meter, it'll pass. Unless it's, you know, that circuit's for sure loaded, then sure. But in certain cases, sometimes you can get burned, and this helps you not get burned. I like it a lot, and I use them every day, for sure every day they're getting used. one way or the other. The back to the power probes and low powered circuit testers. I have the power probe version. I prefer the straight up three, you know, the original three, if you will. I know they've got so many variations on that. I get it. Like, some of the features are kind of neat, but I like the speed and simplicity of the original three, or not the Maestro, or I think they got, I mean, there's a bunch of them. I think there's a, like an Easy, and I don't know. I just think you get away from the formula that really worked. I get what the appeal might be, but it kind of slows them down, starts to overcomplicate them. I just like grabbing the dang thing, touching a, you know, whatever surface, if you will, a circuit, a wire, a conductor, and seeing the voltage there. And then, depending on what I'm doing, applying power or ground. Testing power windows, man, that's so great. Testing relays, just, I can apply power, I can apply ground, both if I want. There's a kind of an alligator nearby that's ground all the time. I can flop directions for testing electric motors, or, you know, power seats. Is there danger? Yeah, just like I said, though, jumper wires, there's danger. You touch the wrong circuit with a jumper wire, you're smoking something. No different than a power probe. Power probe makes it a little too easy. But I don't know. If you understand what it's doing, there's such a time saver. And the long lead to go right to battery, you know, positive and negative. Now you're checking all over the car. And depending on the circuit, you can load test. I mean, it's not fictitious because I do it, but just as an example, I have a crank no start, no fuel pressure. I'm at the fuel pump. I got my power probe, power feeding ground right there. At a flip of the switch, I can apply power, I can apply ground. I can check, like I can command the fuel pump on, be getting 12 volts there, put my power probe on there, see 12 volts. But if something's messed up with the motor where it's not drawing, you know, internally open, internally high resistance, I apply ground to there. That's right, apply ground. I think the Power Probe 3, I think, is around 8 amps, resettable circuit breaker. It pops. I'll do it again. Reset it. Do it again. Reset it. Do it again. I know that circuit can carry 8 amps. Probably got good power. Then I move it over to the ground and I apply power. Boom. Does it pop? Yep. I probably have good enough circuit integrity. Probably a bad fuel pump. That's what I do. That's such a time saver. Are there other ways to do that? Sure. Absolutely. But they kind of get a bad name because, yeah, we've seen what they can do. In the wrong hands, we see what a lot of things can do. In the wrong hands, a scan tool can be extraordinarily expensive, with parts being replaced that aren't bad. Be it DTCs essentially leading to a part number. You know, not that they actually spit out a part number, but you see a DTC and equals a part replacement. That could be a very expensive misuse of the tool. Or looking at scan data and misinterpreting it leads to parts replacement. I suppose there's the argument, one is making a mistake, replacing a part that doesn't need to be replaced. You're not breaking anything. Okay. But it's still misuse, misunderstanding, something like that. And can you break something with scan tool? I suppose we could really work really hard and come up with some scenario where it's possible. We can brick modules, I suppose, with misuse. But the reality is, in the wrong hands, there's a lot of things that can do damage. So I just don't know that that's the way to argue against them. And if you don't know, it's a good reason to learn. So yeah, for me, I love that tool. I use it all the time. As far as I know, I haven't wrecked anything, but I try to be aware. And I'm sure now that I've said that, tomorrow I am wrecking something. So I find a way to wreck stuff anyways, usually because what's the worst that could happen? And then I find out, yeah, FAFO. Autel makes a powered circuit tester. I have that. I do like that. It works quite well. I think there's a bunch of them now. The market's getting flooded. The Snap-on one, I do not like the design. It probably works just fine, but the design to me is ridiculous. It might be even built by PowerPro for all I know, but I don't like where the display is at all. The regular PowerPros make sense to me. For the newer ones, I think there's like a 4. Again, it just started adding more and more features. I get why, but really the 3 to me is kind of where it's at. That's the one I suggest coworkers get, or what we get for coworkers when they're at that level, when they're ready for that. And then, yeah, the digital meter test lights, namely Lyle and Top Down, are the ones I'm aware of. I'm a big fan. I'm a really big fan. And I don't necessarily have a suggestion for which power probe to get. I mean, like I said, the Autel one's priced right and does what I need it to do. And the power probe one's been around for a long time and it works. For me, that was leading up to that one. I couldn't see the point of getting one. The LED thing doesn't work for me. I want to see numbers. When they put the numbers in the display, that became a must have, but I really wanted it and I still use it. So that is my thoughts on powered circuit testers and I guess digital meter test lights. So yeah, I am very interested to hear the feedback on this one because it seems to be a somewhat controversial topic. Yeah, I want to hear where I went wrong on that, or if how many of you agree, or if you have a different favorite. I have a hook, power probe hook. I use it sparingly, right or wrong. I grab the simple ones. I find that they do what I need them to do when I need them to do it. That's what I need. That's what I like. If I need more, then I'm probably busting out scopes. Thank you so very much for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, Autel and Pico Technology. Thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.